Hello again, and welcome back to a new episode of Science with Milk, No Sugar, where we talk about science, research, science communication in a really honest and casual way. My name is Franziska, and I'm your hostess, as always. And today I have an absolutely amazing guest. I know I say this about every guest because I love all of them. But today I'm talking to Lisa, and Lisa is really a great person if you are interested in science communication and learning from someone. And I learn from her every single time that I talk to her. She is really, really cool, and just you can really tell she has a lot of passion for her research and her communication. And she communicates by doing science slamming. And we're going to talk all about doing science slams, how to get into science communication, what are the joys of speaking to the public, what is scary, how do you even start finding what kind of communication is for you. And we're talking about her work at the German Rheumatism Research Center here in Berlin, where she studies the gut microbiome. So gut bacteria, what are they good for? What are they not good for? So we have a very diverse topic today, and she has a lot of diverse interests that we are talking about today. Get a nice cup of coffee or tea, we don't discriminate, and listen to Lisa talking about science communication and science slamming. So let's get slamming, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, I saw you already drinking coffee. I have coffee here. Other people can't see my face, but if my face is hidden, you know where I'll be. My last guest didn't drink coffee, and that was very awkward because I was like, where's your coffee? She's like, I stopped. It's like, oh my God, I should stop. I'm drinking two. It's my second one, and it's 9 in the morning.
If I'd had the time, I'd done a second one too, but just couldn't. Oh no.
Well, after. Well, thank you so much for making time. We already said it's quite early and you only had one coffee. I hope it'll go smoothly, but knowing you, I'm pretty sure it'll be good. So thank you so much for making time and seeing me today, Lisa. I've known you for quite a while now, no? I think 2 years, maybe?
I'd say so too, yeah, about 2 years. And I'm always happy to join your formats, actually.
Yeah, I think the first time we ever met was for a different project, and the first time I actually saw you face to face, you came to my house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was summer, and I was so sweaty, I still remember, because I came by bike.
I don't remember you being mad, but I remember you coming by bike and me being horrified, because it was very warm.
It was so hot, yeah.
So here we are now in gloomy Berlin winter, but nonetheless, I think we'll have a good time. I just mentioned that I've known you for a while, but I don't know if people who are listening necessarily know who you are and what you do. So maybe we can start by you telling us a little bit about yourself. What do you study? Mm-hmm. What level are you? Are you a master's student? What are you doing? And did you always want to be a scientist? Because that's something that people will know about you, that you're a scientist. So maybe let us know who you are.
So it's always a difficult question. I don't like introducing myself so much. Regardless, I'm Lisa. I'm a biotechnologist. I do live in Berlin, and here I studied both bachelor and master in biotechnology. Now I'm working on my PhD thesis at the German Rheumatism Research Center. I hope I'm in my final year of PhD, but who can ever say that? Yeah, thought about the question, did I ever wanted to be a scientist? I'm not really sure. I think I always was curious about things, and so science is something that somehow pops up and is a good fit. I believe I could have done many jobs, but I'm totally satisfied with what I have now, and I think I can always combine or bring in things like communication or writing or whatever into my scientific career and scientific job, so I can make it a combination I do like. Probably, I guess I always wanted to be who I am now, which is a good thing. But was that necessarily a scientist? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I never thought I would go into science, even though I wanted to be a paleontologist. I knew that. But, you know, you had to do all these classes that I was always bad. I failed math like every year during high school. I've just always been bad at it. You know, all these things that are required of you when you want to study, or when you want to study that kind of science. And that really put me off. So from an early age, I thought like, no way. And here we are. So I was definitely always aware that I could do something else and be happy. Like now I do a lot of event planning somehow. I mean, for science stuff, but I really enjoy that. So I think I also found my niche. And I think it's good to hear that not everybody started out being like, I have to be a scientist or that's it, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
it's good to be flexible.
Yeah, I think actually, what is the term? I lately spoke to a person and I said, I'm a scientist. And the person was like, what does this mean? And I think we can narrate ourselves what this means. Mm-hmm. So you have a scientific background in education and you know things. I do know things in biology and then microbiology, and I had math too, and I also was not the best at it. But yeah, what you do with it finally, and how you work each single day can be very different for people that call themselves scientists.
It's true. There's so many like little niches that you can mm-hmm. fill with your skills. And we're obviously going to talk about one of those niches today. But before we talk about how you got there, mm-hmm. and what you're actually doing there, can you tell us a little bit about your workplace and also what are you doing there? You said that you're working on your thesis. Maybe you can I know and I love the topic, but maybe you can let us know what your research is, because I think it's really cool.
Thanks in advance. So I'm working at the German Rheumatism Research Center, and it's a very unique center in Germany, because we're comprising expertise and research around rheumatic diseases. So we do not only do basic research there, but we also focus a lot on doing translational research, so coming to the patients really and translate our findings into therapy approaches, for example, and we conduct clinical studies mainly in cooperation with the Charité. And we also have people that focus on patient care and epidemiology. So basically it's like a wholesome package on the investigation of rheumatic diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. Now comes my topic that in the first place doesn't fit so well, one would think. But yeah, I'm looking at the intestinal bacteria of humans and try to understand what is their role in the disease. And we have developed a method that allows us to look at those bacteria as single cells and see what are their properties. And we think that it is those properties that somehow impact how these bacteria communicate with our immune system. And this is then the root how they influence diseases, probably, such as chronic inflammatory diseases, but potentially all diseases that humans can suffer from. And that's what I'm doing every day. So I look at, I look at single cell bacteria and see how their properties are, or what are they composed of.
If I put it simply, you're working on gut bacteria, right? Is that true?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so because as someone who doesn't study that at all, I do hear a lot that a lot of problems can come from the gut, or, you know, like that being not balanced. And, you know, if you have too many or too few bacteria, that can be bad. Yeah. And as someone like a layman who doesn't like know anything about this or knows very little about it, it's always been really frustrating for me, because I can't see in there. I don't know, you know. So like, oh, you should do this for your gut health. I'm like, okay, yeah, but how am I going to do that, you know? And it's really interesting for me that you actually work on that. So are you looking, like, do you use the micro? Like, do you look at them in the lab? How do you get them? Are you getting them directly from the gut? and whose?
Well, that all depends. There's lots of facets in it. No, the samples we are getting are stool samples. So we are working with stool samples from humans, mainly from patients, but also we have gotten samples from, let's say, my friends and family, and also my colleagues. So yeah, we need to say this. We needed to start it somewhere, and that's where we started. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do we look at them? So we isolate them from the stool sample, because one can assume that there is a lot of stuff in that we don't want to look at, and then we run those bacteria. And that is also something that the German Rheumatism Research Center is quite famous for, that we do use single cell technologies. And one single cell technology is flow cytometry, that allows you to kind of, while the cells are running through a liquid stream, so a buffer stream or something, allows you to look at single cells via light, via laser light. And that is what we are doing. So I run those bacteria through the instrument, and shine laser light on them, and then see in the end the properties that I have marked with colorful reagents. And then by color, I know this bacterium is positive for parameter X, Y, Z. And yeah, that is how I look at them. And then I actually really generate images, and those images are quite easy to understand. So if, as you'd said, there is maybe too little bacteria, we call this a dysbiotic condition, so the diversity is diminished somehow, then we do see this immediately, and you would also reckon it if you look at it. So it's a quite easy way to investigate the bacteria, actually. However, we often get these questions that you were raising too, like, what should I do now for good gut health, and how do I know if I'm all right? And yeah, listen to your body is the best answer we can give at the moment, because I think we know that every person has their own microbiome or microbiota composition, so their own bacterial community in the gut. And that said, there can't be a generalized therapy or a generalized way for everyone. And so, yeah, everyone needs to figure out on their own how at best they come to health, how they feel the best, and how which food they can digest perfectly well, which other may cause us pain, all that I think you need to figure out on your own. So there's no general comment we can make, unfortunately.
And listening to your body is not always that easy. I mean, my body always tells me to drink more coffee, but once I hit my fourth cup,
it can be misleading.
<It's> a...
It can be misleading sometimes. Yeah.
So are you working with people directly? You said that your institute does offer also like treatment, is that right? So do you see patients ever, or do you just supply information for people who do work with patients?
As a scientist, we don't see the patients face to face mainly. Sometimes when we explain the project, then we might do this. But generally, we would not talk to the patients face to face, as I said before. But we have good clinical partners, and they help us to, if we had an idea of a therapy approach or a different therapy approaches, then they would help us to design clinical studies. Yeah, also conduct them. But we do not per se provide therapy. We just have approaches, or we change therapy that's already there. And probably it's going to be adapted to another kind of rheumatic disease. And that is what we are surveying, and what we are looking at the cells then to understand if that works or not. Yeah, that is rather it. But I have been once called to pick up a sample myself. And I must say, maybe that's where I notice I'm a lab rat. But I went over to the clinics and I was like, whom should I talk to now? And should I knock the door and just go in the room of this patient? And yeah, so that felt totally awkward. But I managed it, and I think I better stay in the lab.
It's good to find out your strengths to see. All right. So thanks for your insight in that. I mean, I think it's a really cool topic, and I'll put all the information about what you're doing and all that, of course, in the show notes. So if people are listening, think this is really cool too, and they want to maybe find out more about it, so they'll find you. Maybe we can jump into all of your science communication now, because you've done a lot over the past few years. Maybe we can talk about how you first got into science communication, and if your institute supports this, and maybe how they help you doing that, if you do any at their institute. So maybe tell us first how you got into it and what you're doing now.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks that you think I did a lot. I sometimes don't know. Well, at the German Rheumatism Research Center, when I started to work there, I will call it DRFZ from time to time, actually, because this is a very long name.
It is.
So we do participate quite actively in communication, mainly to patients. And so when I arrived there for my master thesis in the first place, then I was part of the Long Night of Science. And that is what we do besides the Day of Immunology. And also we have school classes over, and we educate students and all this. But the Long Night of Science is, I guess, the perfect moment for a scientist to test whether you can actually talk to non-science or non-scientific people well. And that is what I did some years ago. And I figured I really had fun explaining the cell stuff and the instruments and our concepts on immunology to laymen and to patients even, who had just some questions on how their disease is actually behaving cell-wise. And so I felt like, okay, here I can test myself out. And I got comfortable with talking about science. And then I thought, okay, what can I do? What would be a good format for me to do that? And so, yeah, the DFZ is kind of supporting it by providing you some events where you can test yourself, I would say so. And yeah, then I just started to see what is a format that I would like and stumbled over Science Slam, which is not really true. I didn't stumble at this time over it. I knew it already. Yeah, I never had the I don't know. I was not
the guts.
Yeah, so to say. I never had the guts really to try it out. And but with this long night of science experience and the day of immunology, I felt like maybe I can try it. Maybe I could just go there and try it out. Yeah, that's how it somehow started.
So what exactly made you choose science slamming? Like, I know you said like you knew of it, and I think every young scientist or many young scientists will have at least heard of it. But were you approached by them, or did you decide just I'm going to message them and tell them what I'm working on to see if it's a good fit? Like, how did this even all start?
Yeah. Well, it starts some years back when I was in my bachelor's time. I was working in a company, and every Monday of a month, the first Monday in a month, we would go for a science slam, and it was always a very nice evening. And I thought, well, you know, I got hooked by the people, but also the atmosphere and this audience, and then everyone is like, cool, this is nice science. So it was a way of communicating science without being nerdy and boring to all the people around you. And so I thought that's a cool format to be a cool scientist somehow. at least that's what I felt. And I think I might be good in talking, as you may can tell now, that I talk a lot, and I also tend to make jokes along the way several times. Some are appropriate, some not, but yes. And so I thought maybe this is also a good way for me as a person. So it suits me to communicate this way. And then I just annoyed all my friends and colleagues, I guess, with the idea of maybe I do a science slam one day. And so they at some point just pushed me in. They were like, you're just going to do it now because it's annoying. And now try it simply, and then we will see how it goes. And I tried it at a PhD conference, so it was a little safe environment, to be honest. And it was exactly what I thought it would be. So I stepped at the stage and I was like, I do like it. People are laughing, and somehow they raised cool questions afterwards. And I was like, this is what I want to do. If I ever communicate science in the first place, then I think this is my way to do it. Yes, and then you can start everywhere you want, but I started there, and then I wrote some emails around to the main organizations for Science Slam, and then they book you and give you a try on their stages, and yeah, then all of a sudden it runs on itself.
Isn't it a little bit daunting to start out, because it's on a stage, right? I mean, you said that you started kind of small in a safe environment where you felt comfortable, but as we know now, the stages can get increasingly bigger. So were you super, super worried that you're going to trip and fall, or that you're going to say something and no one laughs? Like,
yeah.
Were you just like, no, this is cool, like, I'm going to do it? Or were you really nervous?
Oh, I'm dead nervous. I still am. So whatever I'm doing, there's always this moment before I step on stage, I'm like, how do my legs function? How do I get to up there? How does it work? What is words actually? What is my name? I kind of still have that. It's getting shorter and shorter, but I think you even need this to have also this rush on stage that you're like, I'm here and now I'm gonna do it. It comes together. But yeah, I was totally scared to step on the stage. However, I mean, I had some scientific presentations already beforehand, so somehow talking to an audience was not too bad anymore. And so now my major concern was, what if they don't laugh? What if they are like, no, this is not funny. I don't even like it. And I still have that fear now. But yeah, so if there is, what I try to do to really calm myself down and get a connection to the audience in the first place is like make them laugh in the first minute about something personal, most likely something about me. Mm-hmm. And so then we have a connection, and then I can just go on and tell them something about my science. But yeah, I was totally scared, and I still am. And it's still worth it. It's still worth it.
It's funny that you say that, because I often do it like that too. Every semester I have a really big presentation at university where I work, mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, orientation week, you know, there are like thousands of students sometimes. And I do the same thing. I always try to be a little bit funny to take, because I'm talking about academic things, like not necessarily like research at all, but you know, things that they will have to remember. And I always try to take the tension away,
yeah,
by just being a little bit funny. And one time I met a student at a party, like not planned. They just came up to me and said, "Oh yeah, I remember your talk. That was really good."
Oh,
and that
awesome.
Was so sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
Cool.
Because they usually go into this lecture being kind of intimidated, because I talk a lot about like syllabus and grades and you know like really things that they need to get funding, because I work also with lots of international students. They usually come, they're scared and they leave, and
yeah.
they're relieved, you know, like it like I enjoy it, and I don't mind being on stage, and I'm not really nervous anymore, because I know I'm an expert mm-hmm. at this topic. But it's a little bit different when I do scientific talks about my work, even though there I was always also the expert, because that's my research.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was more nervous somehow, you know, with the questions, that I couldn't answer them, or I wouldn't have an answer that's satisfying, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're nervous, that's probably also part of why you're nervous, right? Like, good questions, but what if I have no idea how to answer?
Yeah, I think one needs to get comfortable in every setting, especially in the scientific setting, but also when you're talking to students, as you do, or even to laymen and to an audience in a science lab, whatever. Do you get comfortable to the term, "I don't know, but I will look mm-hmm. it up," or "I will come back to you later"? And I think if you once made comfort and peace with yourself that you probably don't know everything, because you just simply can't, and you just kind of live it and be like, "Yeah, I don't know, but I can look this up," or "nice idea," or whatever, that makes life so much easier. And also, if you don't take yourself too seriously, if you, I don't know if you would correlate, and if you say, "Yeah, that's true," that doesn't mean that people should not take you seriously. But if you allow yourself saying the wrong word, using the wrong tense, or stumbling over something, then you would be much more chilled when you go to the stage, because you know already it's going to happen probably anyway. Maybe it doesn't, but if it does, you can laugh it away, and that's fine. And I think that helps,
sure,
that
yeah.
helps so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really the not taking yourself seriously too serious. I think that is really good advice, because, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
You know, you have no influence over other people and what they're going to ask and how they're going to react. So if you just think, you know, "I'm just going to do it and it's going to benefit some people, and some people are going to leave here knowing more," mm-hmm. then that's all I need. Like, that's usually my goal. It's like, if just one person goes home and feels like, "Oh, I learned something," that's cool, you know. Then I feel like I've done my job. So I think I think that's good advice. And you said you emailed the organizers, right? And mm-hmm. Kind of basically pitched
yes.
a little bit. So what happens then? Do you have a meeting, like a face-to-face meeting with them, and how long does it take from deciding that you want to do a science slam to actually being on stage? Was it always like, did you wait a long time? Or, you know, because the longer you wait, maybe the more nervous you become, thinking what it's like, "Oh my God, I'm going to do this."
Yeah.
Like, how long is the process usually if you decide this is what I want to do and you reach out to organizers?
Well, actually, the time periods that you can't predict them. So I started in COVID times, which was not the best way to start science slams, like not the best time. And so they responded quite fast by email or via email. They were like, "Yeah, cool. We will consider you if we have a slam session that would fit from the topics." And then I heard nothing for a while. And that still can happen now, that sometimes I'm like, mm-hmm. do science slams still exist? No one is booking anything. What is happening? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it takes time to get to on stage, really, because they book in, I don't know, they have like batches, and then they plan everything, and then sometimes all slams are already booked, and then you just come exactly in that time. It's gonna need some time until you're gonna be booked, but it can be that you sit there for months and you're like, "Maybe I should not do it, So you start to question yourself again a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it took, I think, 1 or 2 months. And I was like, yeah, maybe no one is interested, whatever. And then, yeah, I was booked for the first time and I tried it. And I still was convinced it's the thing I want to do. And then again, it took 3 months. And so I don't know, from really getting into it, it can be a long time. And now mm-hmm. I know how to use this time. So I try to reflect on my presentation, or I just don't do anything at all and set myself to peace with it. But in the beginning, it can be very, I don't know, intimidating, because you're like, maybe they don't like me. Maybe my topic is not good or whatever. But it's not about you. It's just a system. There is a limited amount of spots, and they just somehow have people. They book more and some they don't. And then you need to somehow find your sweet spot in it. But it can take some time.
A very, very quick little break to talk about this episode's sponsor, the German Rheumatism Research Center. And I've known about them for quite a long time, because I somehow always run into their scientists, because they employ a lot of really cool scientists, especially young women who do really cool research. That's how I found out about them. And Lisa, today's guest, also works for them, as she's mentioned. They facilitate not only like a lot of research that's important to curing and helping with rheumatic diseases and actually finding really important treatment options, but they also facilitate a lot of science communication. I follow them on Twitter and I always see what's new and what they're doing, cool topics that they're also tweeting about that I find interesting for my day-to-day life. But yeah, they're doing a lot of important work and they have a lot of really great science going on. So I want to thank them again for sponsoring this episode. And I really hope that I have more guests from their institute in the future, because again, they're doing so much important work and that's really cool. So I'll put all of the information in the show notes. So do make sure that you check them out if you're interested, not just in gut bacteria. They do a lot of other stuff. And let's go back to Lisa. That is really interesting to see how this is all actually happening and how long it can take, because people might listen and they're interested in doing this and then get, you know, nervous. Oh, I'm not hearing back. Oh God, maybe they don't like me. I mean, they clearly liked you because you won the German championships now, right?
People so like you. I can't tell if the people from the organizations do like me, but the audience seems to like it.
I can say I believe it. I think having seen you in action also at like SOPOC Science and some of my own events, I can see how they like you. So I'm not surprised.
Thank you.
Do you get coached in the beginning from someone? Like, do you know how many people are involved in the process of making a science slam happen? Because you said you're reaching out to a team and, you know, then eventually after a while you'll be on stage. But do you actually get coached if this is like the first time you're doing it? Or are they just like, here's a stage, have fun?
Yeah, it can be both ways. So there are some organizations, or I guess all of them, do provide some kind of coaching. I have been to a workshop or two about storytelling. And so there is some formats where you can learn it, or where you at least get some input and some time to practice, probably time to talk to more experienced people. But in the end, you are the one that needs to go on stage, and you are the one that needs to be comfortable with your presentation and with the potential jokes you're making, with the images you are drawing for the people. So no one can take this from you. However, there is always, and I cannot stress this enough, there's always this comfort team of people around you at those slams. And I do really admire them. They are just there. They're your emotional, mental support, your technical support sometimes, but they're the people that make you laugh before you go on stage, that order pizza for you. And they sometimes come around just, you okay, you need something. And that's like very comforting. So when you are there and presenting, you needed to prepare everything on your own. But when you are there, you don't feel alone anymore. You feel like part of a bigger crowd, of a team. And that makes it very, I don't know, very wholesome to do it sometimes. But I tried to test some of my jokes or metaphors with my friends. I stopped that for a while now, because it's always a very subjective thing. So one person might like it, the other doesn't. And so I would really, to me, it's more important now to go on a stage with a presentation that I think is good and I am convinced of it. And then I just wait what the audience says and then rather reflect on the audience feedback than on a single person's.
Love that you said that because I feel exactly the same. Like to me, the more I practice and the more I ask people like, oh, what do you think of this? The more insecure I become and the more absolutely, nervous yes. I become. I'd yeah. rather do my presentation once for me and think like, yeah, yeah, okay. And then mm-hmm. just do it and mm-hmm. not like wing it or anything, but kind of.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's worked so much better for me. And I'm really glad to hear that I'm not the only one because when I tell people, no, I didn't really practice this. They're horrified. Yeah. They're like, what? Didn't you like, I mean, do a big presentation in front of a lot of people? I'm like, yeah, but yeah, I just do it and then I see.
I think that we might be the same kind of people, but then it must be to you too, that it's just a natural flow of talking. And if I mm-hmm. if I plan too much, I stumble over what I had planned to say.
Yes.
And, like you're comparing words in your brain. It's like, oh, I wanted to use another word. And then I start thinking and then mm-hmm. I'm totally out of it. But if I just talk to people like a normal conversation and it's not a one-on-one, it's a one on 500 or whatever, mm-hmm. but it still works like that. Like really just say what I wanted to say in my own words. And then probably it's not perfect from the words I have chosen, but it's at least authentic how I tell it.
Yeah.
And how I'm speaking. And yeah.
I think being authentic, especially at Science Slams, is really important because people vote for you, right? Is that mm-hmm. they vote for their favorite talk. I mean, that I think maybe that's one of the reasons I haven't done a Science Slam because I do like entertaining and do like talking. But the thought that no one's going to clap or vote for me, I would die.
Of course, of course. But it's nothing to be scared of, actually, because the audience always comes with the idea of seeing people and seeing the signs of these people, and they have no real expectations, I mm-hmm. suppose. So they come really for a nice evening, and it's a chilled setting to present your signs. I have never experienced an audience that was really not clapping or doing something gross or something. No, they are always very appreciative, and they just like to see people talking to them. It's for them, mm-hmm. it's like watching a Netflix series or something in that moment, and yeah. Even though you wouldn't like the series as much, you still enjoyed your time. And I think if the slammers enjoy themselves, then it's hard for the audience to say, oh, I didn't like it. So
yeah, yeah,
nothing and to also, be really afraid of, I think.
They choose to be there, I guess, right? Like because absolutely, they yeah. no one's forcing them to attend a Science Slam. So I guess that is like a good...
Yeah,
a good added bonus.
Indeed, it's also a pitfall of it because sometimes you think, or I once thought, well, cool, I can now reach people that I wouldn't reach through my normal science communication or mm-hmm. or whatever through other formats. But that's not true because the people that come to Science Slams, they also wanted to learn something. So mm-hmm. still, I'm not reaching everyone. I feel, but it's at least mm-hmm. an audience that somehow connect science in a cool way to performances. So it's
yeah.
it's different, but they're still scientifically interested people, I would say.
It's like this is something that I think about all the time. How can I reach everybody? And you never can. You have to really find different like events or options, you know. I mean, of course, we've asked you to do Soapbox Science before, and I think that was really cool. And I love Soapbox Science because there you come to the people, mm-hmm. Which is one completely different way to communicate, right? Because you talk to people who are just running errands, you know, in the street, yeah.
Yeah.
Which has its own positives and negatives, of course. If they're not interested, they're just going to walk away, maybe making you nervous, like, oh my God, they're just walking away. Where you also have to think about, like, maybe they have an appointment. It's not you. It doesn't mean that you're not interesting, but maybe they have to meet a friend or something. So I think whenever you do science communication, again, it goes back to not taking yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. Very often, it's not about you at all. And I think what I really like about communicating science, and I don't know if you also thought a lot about this in a sense, but because I facilitate a lot of science communication for others, you know, others doing their thing mm-hmm. or talking about mm-hmm. what they're doing, I love when then people come to me later or message me and I said, you know, I've never met anybody who studies this or that. And whenever now I hear about the topic, I picture a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really, personally for me, my absolute best case scenario. Like that you're given some like a field or a certain like science, a face.
Yeah.
And I think even with Science Slam, you know, I feel like you're the only person I know who does what they do, you know, like that your research, like that's your thing.
Yeah.
And whenever I hear anything about like gut bacteria or like your institute, like I immediately picture you. And I mean, cool. I'm a scientist already, you know, but people who watched you in the past that I know of, where they watched you either at Soapbox Science or the thing we did before, you know, now they picture you. And I think I absolutely love that. And that is always like, I just, that it's my favorite thing about it.
It's very rewarding, I think. It's a cool idea also. And I think it's also a chance that we have as science communicators, because I can just give back what you're saying, right? When I when I think about, hi, or when people come to me say like, you know, I wanted to do a podcast, or I want to do science communication, and I don't know where to start, then I can say I know someone who knows how to start, and who can give you like a bunch of tips and just motivation for it, and that would be you. So yes, I think giving abstract topics or giving even a I don't know, a field or a job description or whatever, a face, and being there and probably also breaking apart some stigmatas or some schemes or whatever that people think of in science and in science communication, that's just the best part of it. And it's also a very good, it's a cool chance for us to bring across also our personalities and connect this with being a scientist or a science communicator.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is actually, I agree, it's one of the coolest parts in it.
And would you say that when you do Science Slams that it's like 50% women that take part? Because I know a lot of women who do amazing science communication.
Yeah.
But that's also because I maybe pay more attention to women in science, you know, and but you having done it, do you usually feel like you're the only woman there, or do you feel like it's really equal?
Well, so it depends. When I started, I had the feeling that there's so many men, and I am also sometimes be told this, like, well, there's a lot of men that going on stage, not because they are better or not because they block every space, but rather because they feel more comfortable in such a public situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that said, I somehow over the last years have seen a lot of cool women, and they all run on this stage and they rock it. I think it's changing. It still can be that there's more men, and also on if you look the years back and look into the videos and stuff on YouTube, for example, you find a lot of men doing it, but it's changing. So female scientists really come to the stage now, and they have a decent way of communicating it, and then they even change not only the how we see scientists, but also what is a good way of communicating, because we make very different kind of jokes, and we have a very different sense of humor sometimes as from a female perspective. And also they raise female topics or bring attention to them. I have seen a wonderful Science Slam by a female scientist about the period or about endometriosis, and all these topics are brought to stage, and I couldn't love it more. It's like, it's really great. And I think this is something where you see how the society is changing. So because if the audience is appreciate or does appreciate seeing female scientists there, and there's no harassment and no bad situations that probably would kept you from doing it in the first place, then you feel much more empowered to do it and to do more science communication. And I think every woman should come to stage and tell something, because we all have stories to tell and we all do great research. So
That's I'm glad to hear that it's changing. So I feel like science or like Science Slam are definitely a reflection of the scientific landscape, right? Like there are more women who are visible, and if that's also leading to more women doing Science Slam, then I think that's really great.
In the end, it might also lead to more women doing science. So
yeah, for sure. If they see, wow, she can do that, that's cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's really cool. Do you have any advice of like what makes a good science slammer? you know, you being a very good science slammer, do you have any advice of maybe besides having confidence, what you need to be good at what you do? Or do you feel like I don't have an answer for that?
Well, to me, I'm also like 80% of it, I'm the audience too, right? And then the other 20, I'm on stage. But what really gets me, if I see someone who's slamming or who's having their presentation, when they are passionate about what they are telling me and when they try to build a connection. So I need people, when they talk on stage, to find, or I think it's the best way is to find a language to connect to your audience and also to bring across why you love it so much. So, and if someone, I mean, it's also in our all-day life, if someone tells you something they love, and they are just passionate about it. It's very hard to resist, right? It depends on the topic, obviously. But let's say it's something you already also kind of are interested in. And then someone comes and tells you, you should do this. And you know why this is so fascinating. And then you're just going with it, right? And you also, in those 10 minutes, my brain is just focusing on what is said on stage. So this is the ultimate chance for this person to convince me that I should do, I don't know. I have no, like environmental science or something. Mm-hmm. And that is, to me, that's the key. So being just passionate about the things you're saying and then bring your message across in a way that I understand something but still feel connected to you as a person, that is, to me, the best combination in Science Slam.
What do you wish you would have known before you started slamming? Like, is there something you were like, God, I wish I would have known this and I could have done it better? Or, you know, something that's surprising?
No, it's rather a funny thing now. I think someone should have told me that it can be addictive. So if you were on stage several times, I mean, and you get this applause and you meet all those wonderful people, it's really an addictive thing to do. That's the first thing I can say. And on the other hand, there is something that we say in every situation, we both now already mentioned it, to fail is something that is part of the process, and we know this in all parts of our life, but also here it's very essential. So you can come to stage with a slam or with a presentation you don't really feel comfortable with or confident about, and you will learn how the audience like it, and you will adapt yourself and you will adapt the presentation, or you can figure out that you're actually not talking about the right things on stage, and all this is part of the process. It's really a chance to develop yourself a lot, as always in life. And I think it's some people said this before to me, but it's something you learn while you do it. And it's not something you can plan, actually.
We talked a little bit about this, so you just brought it up already, but maybe I'm going to rephrase this question a little bit. What is your advice for scientists who want to start communicating their work? You said how they should do it on stage, you know, to be really excited. And I feel like that goes into really every kind of communication. You really need to, you know, show that you are also interested and others will also be interested. But do you have any advice on how to even get started? Maybe if you don't even know what your niche is yet, if you don't know if you're into public speaking or blog writing, how would you advise a younger student, maybe a master's student who's never done this before, to just start?
Yeah. So I think there's always formats that allow you to start in a setting where you don't feel too much pressure. For example, this Long Night of Science is a thing. Lots of institutes participate, and Science Slam has become a format for science communication that is very often used to also just bring across what does an institute do research-wise, so what topics are covered. Get yourself into this, because it's probably a smaller setting. You have your colleagues around you. You can try it out in a more private space, so to say, or in a more comfortable zone, maybe, than going to a big stage in the first place. And then really try to figure out who is your audience, and then just have fun. So try to find a balance that it's also something that you do for you, because it's most likely happening in your free time. And you should really enjoy it. So speak about the things you like in your science. Speak about the things you always wanted to tell people. Make sure that you're having fun. Don't force yourself to do something. And don't let people force you the topic, probably. So if there can happen that you have some problems with the topic and your group leader or something like this, but really make sure that when you're talking about science, your science, that you can talk about the things you like the most. That makes it the most easiest, I believe.
Yeah, yes. I support this 100%. Like, I also started out at a long night of museums because I work at the National History Museum. And then in my free time, I started doing Pint of Science, where you also, you know, you do, you mm-hmm. communicate your science in a pub. And it's always really fun. Obviously, you don't have to drink. You can also get other stuff at the pub. So it's not about necessarily the consumption of alcohol. But it's also really casual, like smaller environments, because bars only allow so many people in it. That was kind of how I started. And I reached out to them by myself after attending an event. Like, I approached and walked up to them and said, hey, can I join and like do this?
Cool. It's yeah, really so cool.
Yeah, and I've done it since, God, 2017, you know? Yeah. So long, like, it's 16 even, I think, I joined. Yeah. So a long time.
Wow.
I know. This is going to be my last year. And hopefully next time I actually have a guest and we're going to talk about Pint of Science. But there are so many different ways. And absolutely. For me, for example, I know that I enjoy talking face-to-face or to an audience or, you know, a camera and podcast, you know, all these like little things that are like different things. But I realized that writing is too painful for me. So I do have a blog and I do have stuff there, but it's mostly where I write about other women who are doing mm-hmm. science, you know, kind of like a portfolio of my work. But I realized that writing is just not for me. Like, I can just, it's too painful. It is, I get crippling anxiety. Like, what if someone reads this and they think it's trash, you know?
Yeah.
I cannot get over that at all. Like, I realize it's not for me. And last time we had a friend of mine in an episode where she talked about being a science journalist mm-hmm. and how she also doesn't enjoy writing, but she enjoys having written. You know,
like all right,
it being published uh-huh. and people enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, see, but I couldn't even get to that part because I'd be like, oh, I hate this, you know. So I realized it's not for me and it will never be for me. And I think that's fine. Like, if someone now would be like, no, but you have to, people could tell that I'm not doing a good job because I'm being forced, you know. So I think this is really good. Like, try out a few things, see what you like.
Absolutely.
And then you can stick to that or even make your own thing.
Yeah. And that is, I think, most important also, to figure out what is your way of doing things and then go this way too. Mm-hmm. And don't get like, don't try to fit in a role probably, because we have lots of roles already at work mm-hmm. and probably in other parts of life. But don't pick your role here too far from your comfort zone. So do science communication in the way you really feel good as a person in it. And mm-hmm. I find this, I don't know. Now that you've said it, I know I'm talking a lot and I kind of do like it, but I do not really like, I'm already somehow thinking about it now. When this podcast is going to be published, I'm going to listen to it like alienated by myself. And I'm like, why did I say this? What am I saying? This is so weird to me too. So sometimes I don't like the process of writing much, but I like the cross-check I can do on a written word because I can adapt it so many times. But when something has left my mouth, and it's quite easily happening that there's a lot of stuff coming out of my mouth, and then I'm like, oh, now I can't take it back now. And I just done? So I think, I still have this anxiety about speaking out because... Mm-hmm. If I can't choose my word wisely, because we're talking now for a while, I don't know what I have said 5 minutes ago. So, I really think, but that's also a part of it, right? You do science mm-hmm. communication, you do somehow talk to a broader audience. You need to find the comfort, as I said before, in having it done not the perfect way, but having it done in a way that people still want to listen to you and feel connected. Maybe that's more important, even though I really feel alien about stuff I do sometimes.
I do understand, like, especially when I listen back to this and editing, because I've done lots of videos and, you know, you hear your voice. In the beginning, you think, I cannot believe I have any friends or even a partner who would listen to my voice all day. That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after a while, like now I can listen back to podcasts, you know, and sometimes episodes are really quite long. And I go back over it and, you know, edit out stuff or, you know, like just make it sound good, no? And you have to listen to your own voice so, so much that after a while, it's fine. Like now when I hear my voice, I don't think, wow, that's annoying. I'm just thinking, that's my voice.
Yeah.
You know, like you get over it. I guess with everything, you can get used to it.
it's kind of helpful even for, like, I would say so, like putting myself out there on stage, you get criticism, obviously, right? And listening to my own voice in podcasts and seeing videos of mine, I started to somehow say to myself, like, you're doing a good job. You're doing what you can do, and it's all right. I'm not applauding myself or something, but it made somehow peace, or I made peace with what I'm doing because I know how much work goes in there.
Yeah.
And I obviously can focus on the wrong word I said or the wrong expression I made in my face or whatever, but I could also just sit there and be like, you did it, and it was good enough, and that's all right.
Yeah.
So it gave me peace, or it gives me peace sometimes.
That's good advice. I think sometimes people, especially in these days and age, you know, if you do something, I mean, even like a hobby, and it's not perfect the first time, you're like,
quit.
No.
Yeah, that's true.
And of course, you talked about how if you feel like something is not for you, then don't do it, you know. But if you are having fun, not everything is perfect the first time. Like, I mean, it's just normal. And when you're younger, you try everything for the first time, riding a bike, writing, you know, reciting a poem at school, like you're really nervous, but you know, everything is a first time. And when we're older, I think that's really kind of stops because we've had these experiences, you know, we lived in the world, and now suddenly when we do something new, it's weird. And if it's not perfect, then we're like, this is not for me. So I think you do have to let go of this whole, like, it has to be perfect the first try or I'm not good enough, you know? Like you said, it's just if you enjoy it, like, stick with it, you know? If I had given up the first time I did a pint of science and I was nervous and maybe had a beer too many because I was too nervous, then I wouldn't be here now, you know? So,
So, no, I think one needs to embrace the development. I mean, look at you now. I mean, that's amazing, right? How far have you gotten, and how much have you probably adapted yourself on the way, and the formats have become you. Now you are not making a format anymore or joining a format, but formats are you. And it's always cool to look at how one has progressed and developed, and you wouldn't have the chance to see yourself developing and progressing if you always would quit when it's not perfect in the first place. And it surely seldomly is
perfect in the first place.
Yeah.
So what do you want to come next? Like, what is next in the menu for you? Like, you won the German championships, right? So is this the highest you can go? Congrats again. When I saw this online, I was just ecstatic. I'm like, I know her. I was so excited for you. And I was really, really happy. But is there anything else you want to accomplish? Like, is this it? Are you now the queen of Science Slam? Or is there anything else that's next?
Well, no. I am so glad I could participate there, and I'm damn happy that I somehow made it. I still haven't really figured it out, I think. Really not. I'm not yet too sure about it. But no, what I'm sure about is that this is not it, obviously. So I didn't start science communication to reach an award or to get awarded with something. But rather, I think now I have figured out a way that I can communicate science, and I have found my style probably, and now I want to expand this a little bit. I hope that not only with you, but with others, I can talk more than 10 minutes because besides all this focus on my samples, right? So it's funny, I know, right? I'm working with stool samples, and it's funny. People make jokes about it all the time, but I have things to say. I'm a scientist and I do find out things, and my research has an importance, and I do want to talk about this, but not only about the research, also about the academia as a system, the role of females in it. And I think now I have figured out a way which ways I like to communicate things, and now I would just love to expand this a little bit. So having more presentations, maybe longer, not only Science Slam formats, and just bring my points across that actually were important to me also in the first place when I started. So no, this is not the end of it, though I don't know what I will do exactly. I just sometimes I'm just swimming along, and whatever catches me up, I jump on and see if I can do that. So yeah.
Yeah, I saw you have on Instagram, you have an account called What the Cell, right? I thought that was really, that was a really funny title. So and there you talk about your work, right? That's one of the ways you're also using that now.
Yeah. I try to find a mixture there on what I have to say about the gut microbiota or about the gut bacteria. So some facts about it, but also how is our all-day life and what is the results we have, because we can make very beautiful pictures. It's art, I believe. It's scientific art.
Yeah.
And so it's a combination of those things that I try to do on this Instagram channel. I'm not so comfortable with this social media yet, but I try.
yeah. No, I understand. I mean, I'm very comfortable now with it, but again, it's something that you do all the time, right? So. Yeah. Stick with it, Lisa. You can do it.
I will see my development, I hope.
And do you have plans to stay in research? Because you said you have a lot to say and you're clearly passionate about it. Has science slumming influenced your plans for the future? Or is this just, you know, one thing along the way? Do you want to stay in research? Or are you looking what else is out there?
Yeah.
Do you have any plans?
It's such a complex question, really.
People hate that question. That's
why. And I think I have a very a weird answer, or maybe not. So I think now I have opened up so many topics or so many parts I discovered also about myself. So I do like this communication. I do like various ways of communication, and I do love the science too. So I just hope to find a way to combine all of those and do it all together. And I think that's not very satisfying for people who want you to focus on one thing. But I cannot say I have full commitment for only one way, but rather I'm committed to all of them. And I want to figure a way in my person to join them to an extent that it works. Let's see.
Yeah,
if it ever does.
I can relate to that. I also like doing several things, you know, like I get a lot of, so I get, of course, satisfaction out of my job that I have, that I get paid for, but I also like my freelance stuff. And I think if I didn't have science communication or other projects, my happiness levels wouldn't be the same. You know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of talking to other scientists, for example, like you, where I'm like, get reinvigorated, you know, I'm like, oh, this is cool, like, you know,
yeah,
gives me a lot of joy. So if I can keep doing this, even if it's becoming less maybe in the future, who knows, as long as I have that curiosity, I think I'll always be also happy in my other job, you know what I mean? Like, I think
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, if you can have several interests, I think that's totally fine. And I think it's great to diversify interests.
I don't know. I think maybe it's progressing now and it's coming up. But I mean, we are not one kind of person, right? We are not. You can put us in a cupboard and say this is who you are.
Yeah.
And so we allow to be diverse ourselves as a person and our personality traits, but why not also in career? Why can I have a career that covers different parts? And I'm sometimes getting a little mad and a little angry, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it the way people want me to do it. I'm going to do it my way. And it's obviously lots of work. I mean, you must know, right? So there's a lot of work that people don't see, a lot of work you do at home when others maybe go to the movies or whatever. But as you said, as long as you enjoy it, as long as it's your passion, as long as you somehow get reward from it and you feel like you're going somewhere you ever wanted to go, then keep on going. It's a process. And it's like making a good science slam or a good science slam presentation. You adapt on the way. It's progressing with you, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I hope you'll like keep doing what you're doing, because I enjoy seeing it all. You know, I'm like a big fan. And I want to thank you again for taking your time to talking to me again. Like, I know every now and then I circle back and I'm like, Lisa, I have a thing I want to do with you. So it's probably going to happen again in the future. Who knows?
I would love to.
Yeah, thank you so much. Again, this is something I say at the end of every single episode. I interview lots of people I've known in the past or known for a while, and I learn something new every single time. And I feel like now I know you a little better, and I hope that people who are new to you and what you're doing also feel like they now know you a little bit. And if you're interested in what Lisa is doing, her research, and maybe her Instagram, you know, can have an eye on it if she's like keeps posting there. I put everything in the show notes so everybody will be able to find you and also see what you're up to next. And yeah, thank you so much. It was really fun talking to you about this. And
thank you now, for the invitation.
I just want to go to a science slam now. Like I'm just so pumped now. So I have to have an
eye on. Go there.
You're
going to see great people. Go there.
Yeah, this is a great ad for Science Slam. So I hope maybe next time we can go to one together or something. Let me know.
Absolutely.
And yeah, thanks for listening. And thanks again for being here. And we'll hear each other again very soon, I hope. So bye.